The Energy Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee will come to order. And it doesn't look like it, but we have a quorum. And the first bill that is up is Senate File 673, Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to present an idea. It's more than an idea, actually. It's a proposal that has come to my attention and then also to a lot of people up in northwestern Minnesota. And what it is we have a small community up in Kennedy, which is very far northwest corner of Minnesota, and a stone's throw from Canada and not too far from Winnipeg. The school in Kennedy closed a few years ago, and it's a building that has been used as a school for many, many years. But it has a gymnasium, and it has, you know, some normal components of a school. And the community up there was trying to figure out how they could use that and take advantage of that facility. And also, about that time, Ms. Mortensen, who's the city clerk in Kennedy, and others got together around a proposal that looks at developing a green business center, one that would look at a lot of different ways to use green energy. And so this idea kind of took off. And I'm going to let Ms. Mortensen talk about the potential of using the school and how that would mean or what that would mean to the community of Kennedy and the surrounding area.
Ms. Mortensen.
Thank you, Senator Pettner-Salon and committee members, for allowing me to speak today on behalf of the City of Kennedy. I am Shanna Mortensen from the City of Kennedy, and I am the City Clerk Treasurer. And we are pursuing funds for a green business incubator that focuses on green business and energy development. The Go Green Business Center will be a model for the use of green energy and host green energy businesses. The incubator will take us all into the future of green energy use. The center will start out by housing some of the most respected people in the new and emerging industry of alternative energy. It will provide an environment for entrepreneurs to share research, development, ideas, and contacts. It will be a location where citizens, communities, and students can see, touch, and feel green energy and learn firsthand how to adapt that knowledge to their own environment. We do have three green business tenants that will come into the building after the energy conversion is completed. The first tenant will be Next Generation Power Systems, which is a company owned by Dan Jewell. If you are not at all familiar with Dan Jewell, he is a highly respected businessman who helped pioneer wind energy and now travels all around the country consulting on energy development. So we're pretty humbled to have him want to come to our community. And the company, NextGen, will sell small wind turbines, solar panels, and geothermal and backup systems to farms and residences. And then these systems will be used in the green energy conversion, and then they will provide a showcase for in which people can educate themselves on alternative energy sources. Our second tenant is Toddco, and this company is owned by Todd Trutzen. He is from Kennedy, and he's a master electrician. But what is unique to Todd is that he holds an EPRI transmission tech license, and this license allows him to do the calibration of highly sensitive metering systems. There are only a handful of individuals that have this license in Minnesota and North Dakota, so it will be invaluable for him when he installs the next-gen systems. so Todco will install and maintain the next-gen systems. The third tenant, which will not come until the spring of next year, 2010, is Jewell Wind, and that is a publicly held company that was started by Dan Jewell. Jewell Wind will be constructing a commercial wind farm south of Kennedy. The wind farm will be 19 wind turbines with a construction cost of $200 million. So during the construction and after, there will be service and maintenance technicians that will be employed. So these businesses, the first two, will create 6 to 8 jobs by the end of this year, 2009. By the end of 2010, you will have an additional 16 to 20 jobs created. So these jobs, in the less than 24 months, will give you an estimated payroll of $1 million a year. These are good-paying jobs, and they are new jobs that are being created. In the city of Kennedy, we are pursuing other green businesses. Once we get the business, the center up and running, get our tenants in place, we're very confident that there will be additional businesses that are green that will be in the center. Dan Jewell would also like to create an education center where people from all walks of life would come in and learn about alternative energy. The collaborations would take place between the center and institutions of higher living or learning to further the development and education of green energy. Dan's vision and his overall goal is to educate society to further the use of alternative energies and to lessen our dependence on fossil fuels. So the $300,000 the city of Kennedy is requesting would pay for the conversion of the entire building to geothermal wind and solar energy. Dan Jewell is providing the materials at cost, which has lowered the price tag, and then the conversion in turn would be a model for other buildings, and it would create the showplace needed to enhance the use of green energy. Now, these green energy tenants that are going in, they talk the talk, they walk the walk. They don't want any fossil fuels in that building when they occupy it. Right now, the building is currently heated with fuel oil, and we're anticipating it'll take about 30,000 gallons of fuel oil this heating season, and we have the building heated at 55 degrees, and that is the lowest the thermostats will go. So we need to end the dependence of fossil fuel on that building. It's a goal that we all should have. It's a goal these tenants have. And then the Goal Green Business Center will help accelerate and achieve that goal of ending our fossil fuel dependence. And the city is pursuing other funding at this time. A grant has been submitted to the Federal Economic Development Administration. The district representative, John O'Leary, was in our community last week, and he reviewed the project with us. He toured the building. He was extremely impressed with the condition of the building and how usable it would be for a business incubator. When he completed his visit with us, he said he will be recommending funding for the building or the big incubator to his regional director, and the regional director in turn would forward it to Washington, D.C. Now, that request was for $300,000, but it does require a 50-50 match. So we would hope in Kennedy that this project could even be a joint collaboration of state and federal dollars. So then that would help move your alternative energy development into the next decade. We have a lot of local support. In January, the city had determined that we're not going to have enough fuel oil to get through the heating season. So a call went out to the community for donations. And so local farmers to date have donated 4,500 gallons of fuel oil. And everyone that came in the city office wanting to place their donation said, we are doing this because we want to maintain this building so it is ready for businesses to go in, because we need these businesses in our community. The community wants this, and the area needs this, because we are asking for your support of $300,000, which would create a new economy in northern Minnesota that would benefit the entire state. I did listen to the budget forecast on my drive down today, and it doesn't sound very good, but this project, you would create jobs, you increase the energy efficiency of a building to lower the operating costs, and you increase exposure to green energy to everyday citizens. So the money appropriated to this project will be an investment, not an expense. And it's an investment that our country and our state desperately needs right now. So I thank you for considering this project, and I will address any questions.
Well, thank you, Ms. Mortensen. I can hear your enthusiasm. How large a community is Kennedy?
According to the 2000 census, we are 255 people.
And would this create 16 new jobs in this
area? It would be 16 new jobs.
Okay. And $300,000, though, is the full price of the conversion?
Correct.
Okay. Are there questions or comments? Senator Alcee?
Madam Chair, on the solar, would that be used for producing electricity, or would it be used for heating water? Have you determined that at this point? Or
I know it will generate electricity, and I don't know if that electricity in turn will heat the water.
Madam Chair, did
Senator Stump.
Do members have this handout?
No.
Oh,
yeah. Probably have that. To give members, Madam Chair, a little bit of a perspective, Kennedy is in Kitson County, and Kitson County is the very northwest corner of the state, and it's a relatively small county, and it has had numerous disasters in that area because it's bordered on the west by the Red River, and the Red River flows north, and of course, as the spring thaws occur, they usually occur south, and of course, the water runs north, and the drainage doesn't necessarily open up as quickly in Canada as it does in Minnesota. And so Kitson County has been the area of numerous disasters and has suffered from a lot of displacement along the river and also economically the jobs as farms got large and our population started to, you know, our children have basically, for the most part, moved away for both college and university and also for jobs. And so this is really an opportunity for us and to try to bring some more people back to very difficult to have economic development in that area.
Okay. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this was a terrific presentation. You said you were going for some federal dollars of equal amount. So if you did get both this and the federal dollars, would you have more than you need for the plant, or what would your plans be?
Ms. Mortensen.
Thank you, Senator Pretner Sloan. Thank you, Senator Rummel. What we would do then is ask for the state appropriation to be $150,000 to have the matching requirement from the EDA.
Senator Rummel.
And then, Madam Chair, can somebody refresh me or tell me what Section 116C.77 is of the
those are the
statutes?
The RDF funds.
RDF funds?
What does that stand for?
Renewable Development.
The Renewable Development Fund.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
If I may, thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask on the jobs part of it, are those people that are going to be, that are currently living in Kennedy right now, they're just unemployed, or are you going to be people coming from outside of the area that are now going to move into Kennedy? Or what's your thoughts on these people that are you're going to you anticipate employing or benefiting from this for jobs?
Ms. Mortensen.
Thank you. Senator Dahl, our jobs would be ones that would have to move into our community. Some could maybe be from the community, but they are technical jobs, so they would have to have the training work in that field.
And if I may, Madam Chair, just curious, thank you. The school that I'm looking at, it looks like it, you know, would hold more than 250 people or kids in the school. How long has it been closed?
Ms. Mortensen.
Thank you, Senator. It was closed last spring.
Okay. So all those kids have now gone to other school districts to a consolidation or something?
It's a consolidated district, but the K through 6 was in Kennedy and the 7 through 12 was in Halleck. And now K through 12 is in Halleck.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Senator Stumpf, did you want to comment?
Well, we have in Kitson County, there's three school districts that are in Kitson County, Halleck and Lancaster, and then Carlstead. And the Halleck School District was consolidated with Kennedy, and that's really kind of the western part of Kitson County. And then Lancaster's kind of in the northwest, and Carlstead is kind of in the south or southeast.
Well, Madam Chair, I think it's a great idea to, you know, take an existing facility that's now empty and try to put it, bring it back to life with some, you know, a new idea. So I think I can support this idea.
Senator Rummel moves that Senate File 673 be recommended to pass and re-referred to Finance. Any discussion?
I don't know exactly. They covered it.
All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you.
Senator Bach?
So has he been missing that door? Oh, yeah.
Senate File 913.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to be here. This bill really is kind of a starting point from the recommendations that came out of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. One of the things that they suggested was that probably the quickest way that we could reduce carbon emissions is to do something about the miles of vehicle traffic that we have on our highways. And I can just tell you, I certainly have seen that when I came here in 94. The trip in from the north, and I've always rented on the north side of town, has gotten more difficult every year. And so what this bill proposes to do is to try and minimize the amount of sprawl that's going on, to move towards more dense development, and hopefully by doing that we can reduce the number of vehicle miles traveled and reduce our carbon footprint. So, Madam Chair, there's a lot of work to be done on this bill, probably in the local government committee, but today at least, I guess, I bring it to you to talk about the idea that the committee thinks it's a good idea to use land use planning as a way to reduce carbon. That's the discussion I think we'd like to have here today. I have a couple people and that would like to testify on the bill.
Okay, thank you. And who will start?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill Grant for the Isaac Walton League. And for most committees, as we've been talking about this bill, explained a little bit more in depth about the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. I don't think there's a need to do that for this committee. You've been well briefed on that process and what kinds of recommendations it came to. This particular bill relates to the group that met on transportation and land use issues. And one of the things that we learned during the course of the MCAG process as a result of the good work of the Pollution Control Agency was that about 24% of our greenhouse gas emissions are coming from the transportation sector. It's the second largest emitting sector after the electric utility sector, which means that it's a very important sector for us to be targeting for emission reduction strategies. And when we've talked about reducing carbon from the transportation sector, we really think of three different principal approaches. The first, which this bill deals with, and also a similar bill from Senator Dibble, is to reduce the number of vehicle miles traveled. And that's not about taking people's cars away or restricting the amount that they can drive, but rather making it more convenient for them to use other modes of transportation instead of fossil fuel-fired vehicles. The second, as you might recall, is to reduce the carbon content of fuels, and Senator Sharon is carrying that bill this year, and something that I've been very much involved with. And the third issue, the third approach, is to increase the efficiency of the vehicles themselves. And of course, there's legislation that Senator Marty has that's moving forward on that as well. And really, when you think about this, you have to have all three of these strategies working in tandem in order to get meaningful reductions in this sector. I kind of liken it to squeezing the balloon on one end. If you only apply one or two of these approaches, if you don't aren't addressing the number of vehicle miles traveled, but you've improved automobile efficiency, well, clearly you could have a situation where, as a result of more vehicle miles being traveled, it would more than overtake the whatever efficiencies you were able to get through improved automobiles. So when we're looking at outstate approaches to this problem, we need to target a significantly higher percentage of new growth in jobs and housing into incorporated cities and locations that can be accessed by bicycling, walking, and public transit. But we need to move forward with this quickly. Recall that the Next Generation Energy Act requires a 15% reduction in carbon emissions by 2015. Again, if we're doing the math on this and you're not moving quickly in the second largest emitting sector, it's very difficult to see how we can achieve those goals. So we're really hoping to do a number of things with this bill: reduce subsidies for low-density, auto-oriented development patterns, provide incentives and technical assistance to communities to target growth in priority growth areas where walking, bicycling, transit use, and shorter trips can reduce the number of vehicle miles traveled. And I think the bill does a good job of approaching all of those issues in one package. And so with that, I'd be happy to take any questions that the committee had.
Questions? Okay. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bradley Peterson. I'm an attorney and lobbyist with the firm of Flaherty and Hood, representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. First off, I'd like to thank Senator Bach for bringing this bill to help us begin to have this discussion about the relationship between our local communities and the challenges of climate change. And also, too, I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, for having the hearing today. You know, I think that one of the interesting things as we've been going along is to help the legislature realize, for those folks who hadn't yet, that reducing vehicle miles traveled, constraining sprawl, and those sorts of things are just as important to the 80 cities and their local elected officials that we represent as they are to other folks in the state. In fact, 11 of our members have signed on to the Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement, which is an initiative of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and this list includes mayors from International Falls to Winona, the Iron Range to Hutchinson. So this has been an issue that our cities have been engaged with on an individual basis for several years and are now taking collective action on through this bill. According to the MCAG study, by 2025, Greater Minnesota will have 42% of the state's population but will account for 64% of the vehicle miles traveled. And so that, again, I think presents the opportunity for the legislature to look at solutions that involve communities around the state, including Greater Minnesota. Senator Bach's bill recognizes that and that our communities will have a crucial role in this discussion and will have a crucial role in facilitating compact development that's going to reduce those vehicle miles traveled through the establishment of growth areas that the cities would set up based on their population growth needs, the commercial industrial needs of their communities, and then they would then be the ones who are planning in those areas. Also, too, we're looking at then what happens on the other side of those boundaries in terms of growth, and this bill does some things to limit growth outside of those boundaries. There's also language that adds this concept of vehicle miles traveled to discussions in the statute on the redevelopment grant program. There's a new TIF idea that will encourage density as well as some requirements for comp planning. In addition to the climate change implications of this bill, there are other good public policy things that are accomplished through doing this kind of development. More efficient government through managing the cost of infrastructure. I think that it is dawning on a number of folks in a number of different sectors that we can no longer afford the cost of sprawl from a financial perspective, much less a climate one. Preservation of ag land and open space, which we are losing at a rate that far exceeds our growth in population. Some of the studies that I have seen pretty much have suggested that as we grow, we're losing land at double the rate. And then finally, compact communities encourage more walking and biking, and that has an impact on our physical health as well. And so this bill accomplishes a number of good public policy aims beyond simply the climate change piece, which is its genesis. And so, members, again, I thank Senator Bach for carrying this piece of legislation, and I thank you for your time today.
Madam Chair?
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We heard recently Senator Dibble's bill that talked about vehicle miles traveled and things. How does this differ from the bill that he has on here?
Madam Chair, I'll have to have somebody else answer that because I'm not familiar with Senator Dibble's bill. So one of my witnesses probably is.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. Senator Dibble's bill, first off, we view as complementary to this bill and certainly in spirit is trying to accomplish many of the same things. Senator Dibble's bill has more focus on the MnDOT and Met Council planning process. Our bill does not address either of those two entities. Senator Dibble's bill has a grant program for communities to help them as they plan for these issues. We do not have such a grant program. Senator Dibble's bill does address the issue of school siting and the large minimum acreages that are required by the Department of Education. Our bill also addresses those things. In addition, our bill looks more at the concept of defining urban growth areas, which is one of the suggestions that the MCAG made was necessary to do this. Senator Dibble's bill, at least to my understanding, doesn't get into that discussion about urban growth areas and then what happens outside of them. So those, I think, are the major differences.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Dahl.
Peterson, then on this bill, I'd asked before about, on his bill, about the sprawl, about, you know, one thing having a policy, but then if we get down to the economics of things, if people want to make developments, they go to where the land is cheapest because they can put more homes on those areas and return, you know, their return is much greater. How are we going to address that in through this bill? I know there's a provision apparently for having a minimum size lot of 40 acres or something versus 5 acres. I mean, how are you going to deal with those issues?
Well, I think,
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, the one residential unit per 40 acres that you refer to is the standard that we're looking at setting outside of a municipal area's growth area. And you're right, the economics of this do play an important role. And I think what we are seeing is, in some cases, at least in the near term, a slowing in some of the market demands for large lot development. Our changing demographics as folks get older, I think, increasing demand for more compact development. And so I think that in terms of the economics of this, we can't afford necessarily the sprawl anymore because one of the problems that we have is not only the market demand for the actual 5-acre lot, say, but then fast forward 20 to 25 years, and that lot was developed on septics. That septic might be failing. And then some entity then is required to come in and provide city sewer and water. And I'll give you two examples. One, the city of Rochester in the last 10 years spent $22 million from their local option sales tax to extend sewer and water into Marion Township. They had 1,500 homes on small lots with failing septic tanks, and the place was pretty much a cesspool. And MPCA didn't have a solution, the state didn't have a solution, the county didn't have a solution, and so the city stepped up and said, okay, we're going to dedicate $22 million of our local option sales tax to fixing that problem. The other things that they do with their sales tax are very progressive. They've done a lot to invest in higher education down there. And so I think one of the questions before us as we're talking about can we afford the costs of sprawl is do we want our public dollars being spent to encourage higher education, or do we want our public dollars being spent to fix problems that were created 20 and 30 years ago when there was poor or no planning in a certain area? And so I think those are also some of the economic forces that we're grappling with, because it does end up being our cities oftentimes that are on the hook to try to solve these problems for folks.
Madam Chair, one last thing. Mr. Peterson, then on that example that will help me is what part of this bill would mitigate that from happening or limit those occurrences?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl. That is an excellent question, and I think the answer is very clear. It is the municipal growth area, that as we're targeting growth into very specific areas that maximize our transportation and sewer and water infrastructure, we know that that's where the growth is going to go. We can plan for it, and the, I think, key provision of this is that as development occurs, development is going to occur on sewer and water and then be annexed into the city as we go. And so in the future, we'll avoid those situations where we're having to spend a lot of money to retrofit services into existing neighborhoods.
Thank you.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a comment, I guess, first, and that's that I live in a township, and this bill almost seems to me like it wants to do away with townships and really trump a lot of their rights of existence almost and their rights of planning and things to do within a township. And some of the townships in my district have been very well-run townships and until they were hastily annexed. But the other question I have, though, and maybe this is a comment also, is that if you're going to tell people that you can only be at 1 per 40 on your land, you're going to have a fight that you can't imagine, because I lived through that as a county commissioner just looking at some small zoning changes, and, boy, that's right. Land rights is something that people hold very near and dear to their heart, and I just don't know how that's going to fly.
Well, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, I think I indicated at the onset that there was going to be quite a bit of work done on this in the local government committee, and I've met with the counties about this. I've met with the townships about this. I, too, live in a township, and but we can't, and let me just give you the example where I live. I live on Lake Vermilion. There is about the last 5 miles out to my place. Over the last 6 or 8 years, lake property's gone up a lot in value. I guess I've never counted how many driveways now spur off of that county road going out to the public landing as people have moved off the lake or built a cabin, a seasonal rec building with a garage they can keep their boat in, and there is a huge second-tier development happening of 5-acre lots right off of the lake now that someday are going to create a real problem from a water quality standpoint. And we got to have a discussion about whether that's really the best use of our public infrastructure also. At some point we're going to have to build some kind of a collection system for water and sewer there. But now if you have 5 acres, it's just kind of willy-nilly you go build something. I think we all have to, those of us that live in townships have to have this discussion about if that's the best, the most efficient use of our land. Too much of it's happening without any planning at all. Just because you happen to have 5 acres, you can build something. And long term, that is expensive infrastructure to put in when you have to come in and do it after the fact. And that's all probably a discussion for the local government committee. And I'm I've assured townships that I think as this bill moves forward, I think as it's drafted, they probably don't have enough input in the planning process outside of the corporate boundary of the city. And we will need to figure out some way in the local government committee to give townships a seat at the table when a city determines what a growth area is and wants to do some planning out there. And I don't know what that looks like yet today. I think until we get those cities that are growing down at the table with the surrounding townships and with the counties, I don't think we know kind of how they all collectively can work together and do a better job of land use planning than we're currently doing today. But I know we can do better than we're doing today.
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Senator Bach, I guess I was going to go someplace else with some of the questions, but let me be clear up front. You're way off base on the septic versus wastewater treatment issue. A properly designed septic in Minnesota takes care of 98% of all harmful contaminants every day. The best treatment plants, the best municipal treatment plants in the state of Minnesota take care of 68% and flush the rest down our lakes, streams, and rivers, creating a bigger nightmare for somebody else that's on the tail end of it. So you're way off base in terms of that, although I do agree with planning things right. We better know what we're doing in the end in terms of collecting waste and treating it. So, and people that know me know that's been my fight here forever, and it will continue to be. But in looking at it, and I think we ought to have this discussion on planning, but help me out here, because as I'm looking at the whole thing, I'm kind of visioning what we used to do, and it seems like we're kind of going back to our old core cities, which I think might be a good idea, but is that kind of the general thing, is to have the downtown and to have the people living in town that work there and having our green space and things backing up to it? Because I'm kind of thinking maybe we used to do it right and we got away from it somehow and we're trying to rope it back in.
Madam Chair, Senator Jungbar, that's probably a pretty accurate observation. And, you know, it's more than just the greenhouse gas issue. It's the utilization of a finite resource in oil. And we got to think about how we're going to do a better job of conserving finite resources. And maybe we're not going to drive in a half hour or 45 minutes to work every day. Maybe that model needs to be reexamined.
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Bach, I guess that gets me in the right direction of where I'm going and kind of piggybacking off what other people were thinking. That and Senator Olsen kind of hit the nail on the head. I agree wholeheartedly that was a good model. Should get back to that, but how do we give us some of the ideas you're thinking in terms of, you said it needs work, but how do we protect people's values and still not go through this leapfrog and hopscotching and other things? Have you got some ideas where you're going to go with that down the road so we can kind of know how to move this out of this committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Jungbar, I don't bring this here with any preconceived notion. I mean, there have been plenty of anxiety between townships and cities during my entire tenure here. And I don't pretend to know how they together can do land use planning outside of annexation, but I think we got to try sit people down and try figure that out. I think it's in everybody's interest to try figure that out, and if this bill gets everybody sitting at the table to talk about how we can plan better, then I think it's going to generate a good discussion. And sometimes it takes legislation to get people to come to the table and sit down and talk about problems. And I suspect this is what it's going to do, but I don't have some notion as to what the language will look like, how townships and cities are going to collectively plan outside of the city's boundary. But I do think it's a good discussion to have. And maybe this bill will fail, but even if it does, if we've started down the road of local units of government that share borders and share infrastructure, getting to know each other a little better and not being threatened by each other, and they can plan better, well, then maybe even absent the bill, maybe we'll have accomplished something.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, I'm glad to hear that you are remaining to keep townships at the table, because as we all know, they are the first line of government and they're very important, especially where a lot of us live. I mean, they do the people's work out there, absolutely. But you made a comment that about the reality out in Greater Minnesota, as you know, is the people go to where the jobs are. And if it's 45 minutes away, they travel there. Job creation isn't happening in the community that they live, but if a job is created in a surrounding community, that's where they go. So it's this wide web that they have to pull in. And I don't think any mandating or any type of land use program can change the reality. Is people are going to go where the job is, and they're going to live in their community. That's just a comment I just want to make sure that we get out. But my question has to do with Section 3, line 4-8, about the Commissioner of Education must evaluate the energy and environmental impact of any new school facility. And then the next sentence, if a school is proposed on a new site, the commissioner will examine the energy cost associated with that facility. Is the Department of Education set up to really deal with all those? I mean, their education, they're not geared for energy costs and environmental impact studies. And is there a relationship that they're developing with the Pollution Control Agency or with the Office of Energy? And I mean, how is that going to work? I really don't understand how they can say your energy costs are too high. Tell me how this is going to work.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe I'll have Mr. Peterson answer that, but just let me briefly say Department of Education does authorize school siting. And under the current law, there is a certain footprint you have to have before you can build a school. And oftentimes that pushes that school construction out into the countryside someplace because there isn't room to do that redevelopment downtown. I think we need, and we'll talk about this in education, but I think there needs to be a discussion about maybe the best place for the school, and maybe the way we've been doing it, requiring these large footprints, isn't the best decision for the environment long term. But they do school siting, this bill asks them to take a look at the way they're currently doing it and take some other things into consideration when they make those decisions. But Mr. Peterson knows more about this than I do.
Madam Mr. Chair, Peterson. Senator Rosen, Senator Bach is indeed correct. The Department of Education actually does a lot of analysis once they get a proposal from a school district in terms of the site. They have at least a couple of individuals whose job it is principally to do this analysis. They look at the transportation flow that the site would allow. They look at things related to the Americans with Disabilities Act. They do a fairly robust analysis of the site proposal with the district when it's proposed. And I think it's been interesting as we've talked to members of the legislature about this bill. The one thing upon which there seems to be much more consensus than anything else is that something needs to be done on this particular issue, because many members have had the experience in their own communities where a school, because of the department's site requirements, has needed to be placed 1, 2, 3 miles outside of town. And that then engenders the cost of extending the infrastructure out there, perhaps upgrading the road that accesses that site. It then ends up, if you haven't done or been planful, artificially creating the direction in which your community is going to grow because people want to be near the school. I think the benefit of this particular one as a very specific example of kind of the greater impact you can have on public policy rather than just focusing on one issue is that when I worked at the American Heart Association, this was a large issue for them, because of the childhood obesity epidemic, and because when you build a school 2 to 3 miles away from where the students are or where the staff is, everybody has to drive to get there, and there are no sidewalks there. And so the department does do a fairly hefty analysis as it is, and I think what we're asking them to do is to consider a couple of other items and to be a little bit more flexible with local districts.
Madam Chair?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. But, Mr. Peterson, Senator Bach, that doesn't really answer my question. My question was, you're in front of the Energy Committee. The bill is specifically asking the department to evaluate the energy and the energy cost and the impact study. How is that going to work? Who are you reaching out to? I mean, is the department geared to determine that this building is going to be is too high and their energy costs and what are they? I mean, I'm not quite sure if the department said you can't build that school because your energy costs are out of line. Where are they getting that information? And does that put a kibosh to the entire project? Do you see what I'm saying out of this, these two sentences? I'm very concerned about the department's level of expertise and the direction they're going in this area. I understand the siting. I understand that. And you answered that very well. It's the energy cost and the impact, the environmental impact study.
Mr. Peterson.
Senator Rosen, you've identified what perhaps is something that we'll need to work on, I think. You're right that you know, they do a lot of analysis. I don't know specifically that they have the infrastructure to do the cost energy type of analysis. And, I mean, that's something that certainly as we go through the process and get to education, I'm sure the department will want to comment on. And we had not necessarily envisioned an extra relationship between them and another agency. But that's certainly something I think that's a valid concern and something that we'd be willing to work with them on once we get to the education department. Education Committee.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Peterson, this is about energy, though, so it is something that I just want to make sure that we aren't derailing or misleading the department of their ability to determine energy costs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Any further comments? Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, I'm not too sure this is relevant, but when we built the new school up in Hugo, it was part of the RFP that it be energy efficient, and then I think the department then reviewed that. So I don't think the department had to do all that assessment. It was simply part of the RFP from the district on how the energy efficient the building would be.
Well, I think that's true, too, in Duluth, who just went through renovating about 13 new buildings, and seven of them new and 13 existing buildings. And the energy efficiency was part of the presentation to the department when they were seeking approval. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like this provision. I think it's good to pay attention to these things that have been spelled out in the bill. I think Senator Rosen raises a good point. Who is going to do it? Who has the competency and the capacity to do that? Probably doesn't exist within the Department of Education. It certainly exists in a few other places. I think of the Office of Energy Security and their work on the microloans and the public buildings energy bill that we passed jointly last year. So there's a lot of capacity there. They also have a lot of folks under contract who can do that kind of work. We heard from the U.S. Green Building Council on my bill. They were talking more about taking a look at applying LEED standards to development areas, but they also have another initiative looking specifically at schools, both the structure of schools as well as the siting of schools. I'm guessing that Senator Bach's intent is less focused on the actual structure and functioning of the energy that it takes to power the school in terms of the building design, but more talking about locational efficiencies and transportation energy, taking advantage of existing infrastructure, similar to how my bill is constructed. We don't quite talk about it in this part, but we go on and look at criteria in my bill that gives bonuses for schools that redevelop on site or decide to locate near existing parks and transportation infrastructure and other public facilities that allow that school to take advantage of things that they might need closer into town or inside of town itself. But it's an excellent point, and you know, we have the experts right here, as a matter of fact. They can help us out with that stuff in the future.
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
Maybe just a comment, and I'm kind of thinking back home if it's generally, for instance, believed, at least where I'm coming from, in terms of living, if Rochester is growing north, and if that's where we probably know the population of our city is going to be in the next 50 to 100 years, and if the school board was contemplating building a new school, under normal logic, they'd probably build it more northerly. This would suggest that we need to look at 2009 and apply all the logic that we would apply in 2009, and we'd probably build that school more southerly, more inner city, and at a point in time, we full well know that we're going to have people living out here that are going to have to ship their, not the people, but the school district's going to have to take their city people back to, you know, back into, if you will, the not the inner city, but the city to the old city, so to speak, to for their children. I don't know. I guess I'm just sitting here wondering whether or not some of these decisions are better made by school districts as opposed to the state government.
Senator Senjum, I think that there are provisions on page 6 and 7 that allow the city's growth area to extend into that unincorporated area for growth. Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, I think what this bill in the school siting section really is focusing on is the acreage that's required. And I think I don't want to speak for the Department of Education, but the conversation that we had with them was very enlightening in that they seem to view that school buildings have a limited shelf life. And sometimes that shelf life might not be more than 30 or 40 years. And so I think that as you are planning where your growth is going and as you're planning where your population is going to be, you know, this doesn't necessarily require, it would be counterproductive, Senator Senjum, and you're exactly right, that if we were saying that you have to put the school not where the kids are going to be, that doesn't make any sense. And I think this just gives districts flexibility to say, we want to put the school where the kids are going to be, and if that's a 50-acre parcel, that's fine. If that's a 60-acre parcel, that's fine. If we do need an 80-acre parcel, we can do that. But that we're not bound by the minimums that the Department of Education promulgates. And different states have actually handled this in different ways. The state of Maryland has gotten rid of their minimum acreage requirements. The state of Maine has actually set a maximum acreage requirement for their schools. And so this is not intended to take flexibility away, but rather enhance a district's flexibility as they're making their long-range plans.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam. I just wanted to emphasize that point because I think that's a persistent misperception of the bill I'm carrying as well, not just the school siting piece, but, you know, the whole development piece. The truth of the matter is, as much of our policy exists now, certainly as this policy specific to school siting, as well as a lot of the policies we have in place that have to do with, you know, system plans, infrastructure development, zoning regs, comp planning, land use, the inflexibility that communities have right now exists now. The inflexibility in what schools, where schools can be sited, exists now because of these minimum acreage requirements. Schools are forced out of town. I mean, you know, you look at Caledonia, Minnesota. Wonderful little town, had to build a new school, built a beautiful school way outside of town in the cornfield, you know, and they had to because they were forced to by these siting regs now. You know, if these are changed, you know, they may well have chosen to build that beautiful new school out, you know, and also done some planning about around that and, you know, and decided intentionally to move their town in that direction. But as it is, that was kind of the default that they were forced into. I think both bills look for more flexibility and more intentionality around how communities develop themselves.
Further questions or comments? Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, my only comment was that, or thought was that, and I may be misreading this, but on line 234,
it talks about, you know, the commissioner issuing a positive, negative, or unfavorable review, and it seems like if you're going to base your, if the commissioner is going to base their decision on, and I'm not sure if it's exclusively energy or how the commissioner might balance that, but if it certainly has a strong thrust towards energy, why, in most cases, the idea of expanding to where the people might be someday is, that idea is going to get a negative review, and for the school board. And the tendency would be probably to leave it more into the compact area of the city as opposed to moving that school to where you think over the course of the next 50 years the kids are going to be. It's not a point to quibble about, but it's just a thought.
Any comments? Senator Bach, I'm counting on you not to let the bill fail. I think it's an excellent bill, and I hope that you do stick with it and work out some of the issues, and I know the township issues are a problem that need to be accommodated, but I'm hoping that you continue to work on that.
I will, Madam Chair, but I just want to make sure this committee is full well aware that there is not consensus around this as it relates to the multiple local government jurisdictions. There's a lot of work to do in the local government committee on this.
The important thing to note is that as we've been looking for reductions in greenhouse gases, that this is one of those that gives us the best impact. Almost 15, what is that? Is that million metric tons of carbon, higher than any of the other, what we traditionally think of as high carbon reduction initiatives. So I think this is an important one for us to try to find a way to make it work. Senator Dibble.
If we're ready for a motion.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I'll move Senate File 913. You recommended pass and referred, where are we going, local government?
Education.
Referred to education, Committee on Education.
Okay. Education. Any discussion on that motion? You're sure it has to go to education? Okay. On the motion then that Senate File 913 be recommended to pass and referred to finance, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Thank you.
Members, we're going to hear Senate File 657 next. Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. Chair, this bill is kind of a moving target, and it has to do with the federal stimulus funding. And maybe 2 weeks ago or so, I passed out a bill that was kind of a placeholder, and this has been fleshed out some more, but it's still kind of a placeholder. Because it really has to do with a lot of spending, and this is not a spending committee. And so it will be referred from this committee to finance and end up in Senator Anderson's Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee or Budget Committee, so where I had really been hoping to avoid any real earmarks, but it's likely that we will have to better define this as we move along. It's just that I felt that we needed to be prepared to accept and utilize the funds as they come to us. And I thought that it was important for us to put forward some recommendations in terms of how we will spend those funds. I had requested bills from people who are interested in utilizing those stimulus funds. I've not received many, and I'm hoping still that some will come forward, because these funds need to be expended quickly if they're going to have the impact that we hope that they will have. So I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill, Senate File 657, but I have a delete all amendment, and that is the A3 amendment. And actually, this is the first time it's being heard, so I'd like to offer it as an author's amendment, if I may.
Senator Prentner-Solon moves the A3 amendment as an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
And so, Mr. Chair, I'll just walk you through the bill. And Section 1 defines the stimulus funding, and it includes money for weatherization, state energy programs, energy-efficient appliances, and energy efficiency and conservation block grants. Section 2 then is the section that pertains to weatherization. The section limits administrative costs for increased program activity and encourages the use of contract services. This section requires that existing weatherization providers be fully utilized before additional services are added, while also requiring programs for rental units be developed. This section also requires a number of strategies for stimulus-funded weatherization. For example, there have been attempts to implement neighborhood saturation programs for SIP compliance. And we've heard some of those in this committee, and actually I'm hoping that we will hear from another one of those next week or 2 weeks from now. This section requires the strategy be one that must be used for stimulus-funded weatherization. Other strategies include developing weatherization packages to increase the number of households served at a lower cost, and to develop more comprehensive weatherization packages that would use funding from a number of sources. Section 3. Requires the Department of Commerce and OES to coordinate the use of stimulus funds with BPEEP, which I think was authorized last year, which is the Public Buildings Enhanced Energy Efficiency Program, and to prioritize cost-effective energy projects that are ready for immediate implementation. This section caps the stimulus funding portion to 25% of the overall project cost. Section 4 requires the Department of Administration and OES to develop a joint plan to implement stimulus projects, prioritizing cost-effective energy projects that are ready for immediate implementation. And this section requires the same PB coordination and sets the same spending caps as Section 3. Section 5 relates to residential programs. It requires a portion of the stimulus funds be used for a window replacement and insulation program for existing housing for low to moderate income households. These funds must be used to provide incentives to complete cost-effective energy-related improvements. Section 6 relates to commercial and industrial facilities. Section 7 relates to appliance replacement and directs the Commissioner of Commerce to use the stimulus funds to increase or enhance the amount of rebates for residential utility customers through SIP. Section 8 directs OES to oversee training of energy auditors and directs the Commissioner to recruit individuals for training who are unemployed or underemployed individuals in construction trades. If there is a need for outreach, the Director must utilize paid and volunteer youth. The OES must contract with a Minnesota nonprofit to create an energy technology transfer and training center. Section 9 directs OES to provide advice and assistance to local units of government, particularly small cities, to obtain and implement the stimulus funds. Section 10 authorizes all state agencies and local units of government to apply for all available competitive grants. Section 11 allows the Commissioner of Commerce to amend and approve SIP plans to accommodate the federal stimulus plan, and then Section 12 sets the effective date as the day following final enactment. I forgot to ask. Craig Johnson was here and was going to speak on the last bill and didn't. He was going to speak in support of that bill, but he also indicated that he does support this bill and likes the provisions for cities in here. Is there, and that's basically the bill,
that's
Mr.
It.
Chair.
Well, did you want anyone to testify on?
I have nobody to testify because I'm still waiting for the bills to come in.
Senator Olsen.
I have a question under Section 2 weatherization.
Mm-hmm.
Like 1.9.
Mm-hmm.
Services must be fully utilized existing providers.
Right.
So I suspect when the Office of Energy Security says they're going to get $200 million, that they're going to go way beyond their current contractors, the people that use now. So is there provisions on how that next step is done? Is it out on RFPs, you know, or how do they lay out who gets hired for those positions?
Well, first of all, the AEOAs and the CAP programs and the weatherization programs that are out there will be the first groups of people that will be assigned the funds and the projects. And then beyond that, we talk about hiring unemployed or underemployed construction trades, providing the training for them, and also youth. I'm assuming there will be a lot of youth that are without a lot of funds available in the coming year because of the economy. And if we can provide some job training skills for them or provide some structured time for them, I think that it will be a bonus for the communities and for the youth.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On residential programs over in Section 5, when it talks about insulation and window replacement, will that all be coordinated with, like, the weatherization? So it's all going to be...
That's the intention, that the weatherization programs, the window replacement, and the appliance replacement all be coordinated.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Chair Dahl. Senator Pretner-Solon, I noticed that there are limitations on the percent of stimulus money that can be used for local government, school district building renovations, and state buildings. Is that part of the language of the stimulus package, or is there a reason that that limitation was established at that level? That would require a 75% local match.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Pretner-Solon.
Senator Sharon, we had a lot of discussion about that. I actually wanted it. I think the feds actually say that there needs to be no match, but this is possible for it to for there to be some discussion around this, but the effort was really to spread those dollars as much as possible. So if there are other funds that they can use to match it with, this certainly is up for discussion.
Senator Sharon.
Does that mean in the future, or are you talking about changes right now?
Oh, I suppose you could change it at this time, Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon. But as I said, this is a fluid piece of document. It will be heard in Senator Anderson's committee. I'm sure there'll be significant discussion at that time, too.
Senator Sharon.
I would wonder... Senator Pretner-Solon, since someone is here from the League of Minnesota Cities, maybe they could speak to me about that issue, because I'm concerned about the amount of shifts or transfers of various kinds of costs onto local units of government, loss of local government aids, loss of maybe the capacity to raise revenue on local property, the increasing reliance on local property taxes to fund government. So... I'm interested to hear what one of the local units of government might say about that.
Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. And I can give the answer in two parts, Senator, I think. First of all, yes, we obviously would be tickled pink to get 100% grant money for doing these projects. There's no doubt about it, and 75% or 50%. The intent, I believe, of the 25% number, which I think was pretty randomly chosen, is that the way the public building energy efficiency program works is as a lease purchase program. So communities take out a lease to pay for a capital improvement. The energy savings over a certain time period pay off the capital costs. The community then, after that point, starts getting the energy savings on the bottom line of their budget. This was an attempt to allow communities to immediately start getting energy savings as a bottom line saving as soon as they do the program. So it was a way to cover enough of the costs so that those lease payments being made were less than the energy savings the community was seeing in their building. I think that's the reason that number was picked. But certainly a higher percentage makes it even cheaper for cities to do these projects.
That is accurate.
Does that answer your question, Senator Sharon?
Yes, it does, and more. I think it's the utilization then of the stimulus dollars is for a very narrow purpose then. It's for a very narrow purpose. It's not general kinds of energy efficiency activity. Is that correct?
It's for energy.
Senator Prettner-Solon?
Go ahead.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Senator, it is for energy efficiency. The department could certainly comment, but I think it's going to be relatively broadly read as energy efficiency improvements on public buildings.
So just to make sure I'm clear, so it might be something other than the program that you've just been talking about. It would be some other program other than the one you're talking about, which is energy improvements where you recapture through a lease the value. It could be something other than that program. Insulation.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Senator, you are correct. This is narrowing the use of those federal funds to go through this program, to do it as a lease purchase arrangement for the improvements in the program. Which is not necessarily required by the federal stimulus package. That's correct.
Mr. Chair. But
Maybe what we're looking at as far as defining it in Section 216C, that section of statute has some definitions as to what qualifies for energy efficiency projects in that program. So that, I don't know if that helps you at all as well. Senator Prettner-Solon, do you have something
and
to add?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say, Senator Sharon, that this was set up specifically for these public programs to have a vehicle for helping to fund some of that. So I think most of them would try to take advantage of it.
Senator Anderson, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm unclear about the difference between sections 3 and 4. Is that just dividing up state schools and local buildings versus state buildings? Is it exactly the same otherwise?
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Yes.
It's the same program we're talking about?
Let's see.
Senator Anderson, maybe Mr. Fuller can answer that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, last year when we passed the bill, there is a state government building component to it, and there is a local government school district component. Different statutes, they're very similar. I mean, I see Sheldon Strom is here, and they use the oil, set up with the oil overcharge money, and you get a lease payback. But obviously the state... The state isn't going to make payments to itself, and so that's one of the differences. But they're same definitions, same idea, different segments of government, so some different rules.
Okay. And so MNSCU, someone asked me about MNSCU. That would just fall under state government buildings. They'd be eligible for that, all the state university programs. Great. Another question. I just wanted to highlight – in the training guidelines, Mr. Chairs, Senator Prettner-Solin, perhaps we should go a little broader than unemployed and talk about economically disadvantaged workers. Might be a group that we would want to give some, you know, try to focus some attention on in training opportunities and job opportunities.
It does say unemployed and underemployed. Mm-hmm. That is economically disadvantaged a definition that isn't captured in that.
I would, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I think that might be a little bit broader because you might have someone who is making, you know, is working half time. Well, I guess that's underemployed, or someone who doesn't have very much money and wants to get a better job, perhaps.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Senator Anderson, I think when I was talking about this, I was thinking of the 60% of construction workers in my area who are unemployed at this time, and I think that's true throughout the state, and I just thought that this may be a way to bridge the time until the economy catches up and they are able to get jobs in other areas.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I agree with you. That's a great opportunity for all the building trades and other skilled tradespeople that are, you know, there'll be lots of opportunities for jobs in the building area with this. But I think that we just want to be, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for a lot of communities for different workers. So I just want to make sure we open up these opportunities to a lot of people. And, Mr. Chair, maybe I should just say also that, as you mentioned, this will be going to my division, and I guess as we bring other ideas come forward for specific ways to spend this money, it's going to add up to a lot of ideas, and we'll have to try to put it all together and figure out how to divide up the pie. So, as Senator Prettner-Solin said, I encourage people who have other ideas that aren't in this bill or in a, you know, to put another idea out there so we know what all the options are in front of us so we can put together a stimulus bill, our own mini stimulus bill, and try to pass it as quickly as possible. I'm thinking that, I mean, this hasn't been completely decided, but it seems to me that we should do this as fast as we can, get those dollars out and put people to work as quickly as possible, and perhaps try to do it outside of the regular budget process so we can move it more quickly and have some impact fast.
Very well said. Senator Sharon.
I'm sorry to sort of hang around this one issue of the 25% so much, and I don't have a proposal, but I know you're going to be working on this, so I'd like to just say, so as you're thinking about how to refine the language, I'm thinking about a very small community in my district. The city of Cortland has been trying to find some money to do some energy efficiencies as they transfer from an old building to another old building for their city hall, and they simply don't think they'd have the 75%. To be able to come to the table to match this. So that's where I'm coming from, that maybe there are some property wealthier communities that would be able to meet this if they're eliminated from this because of some language. That's what I'm thinking about.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Prettner-Solin.
I'm not sure that was explained real thoroughly then, although we can make those adjustments. But the purpose of the 25% was that it would provide that 25% that is needed to get over the hump until they start experiencing the payback on their energy bills so that the difference would pay for their 75%.
I see.
Right. And that's why we're having this conversation, too. So if you have some specific examples or ideas on your area that you think need to be addressed, then we have to work with Mr. Fuller and come up with the language that we can insert into this bill. Senator Rosen, you were next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Prettner-Solin. On the line 4.12, the match dollar for dollar on the Energy Technology Transfer and Training Center. I'm sorry, I stepped out of the room. Did you cover that, and how is that going to work? I guess I'm a little confused on how that works.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
What is a dollar for dollar match, and how is that?
Sure.
Mr. Strom, Welcome to the committee.
I'm Sheldon Strom. I'm with the Center for Energy and Environment. And this technology transfer and training center is an idea that was actually generated last summer by a meeting with a bunch of people in state agencies who were responding to some language in federal legislation related to DOE that was intended to create regional training or technology transfer centers. A bunch of those people in that meeting, state agencies and others, called us and said that they thought that it would be most effective to coordinate these projects with a nonprofit who could accept funding from foundations and manufacturers, and those would be tax-deductible contributions. So the so for a number of months, probably almost 9 months, we've been meeting with various players in this, as listed here in the bill. And the idea of this center is to coordinate information and technology related to energy, especially for professionals, building operators, engineers, architects, in other words, state-of-the-art information, and making that available for the professions to ensure that we always optimize the types of buildings we build and operate. The idea was that there would be, if this is a viable venture, it would need to be have ongoing funding. So the idea here is that there would have to be a litmus test that you'd have to have an initial 100% match to ensure that on an ongoing basis this was going to be self-sustaining, funded by industry, other grants, and so on, and not essentially dependent on the state. So it was, the idea would be that stimulus funds would jumpstart this, but a wide variety of other resources would keep it going. And I can go into a lot more detail on the idea.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me circle back to the 25%. I just wanted to be sure that Senator Sharon was really clear that we're not asking local units of government to bring 75% to the table in the form of cash. This is the existing PB program that we passed last year. And so the 75% is represented by financing, a form of financing called lease finance, or what, I can't remember what it's called, but it's a form of financing, and it's the financing is possible through energy savings, and so a public entity, a local public entity, a school or a city, would find financing to do the energy improvements, and to pay for those energy improvements. They would use the savings. So there's no 75% chunk of dough that they have to bring forward. Their financing is made much more readily available because they're only representing 75% of that. So it's a good idea. I think it would make a lot more activity possible at the locals. I did have a question or an observation on, I don't know if we've talked, I was out of the room for just a few minutes, so we might have already covered this. Under weatherization, the these lines 9 and 10, talking about existing providers of weatherization services must be fully utilized. I appreciate that, and I think that probably comes about, or maybe, I don't know, came about of my concerns articulated earlier about whether or not, those who are carrying out those activities by and large are doing them to the best extent practicable now. Are they going to be able to ramp up to the kind of capacity that, this $120 million represents? And so I would hope that we just simply we don't assume that the existing providers, I hope we have maybe build in some expectations, some standards, that whoever we're going to be using to carry out these weatherization services can really show that they can receive these dollars, mobilize them, mobilize the crews, get out to the neighborhoods. I mean, I like what we say further down, neighborhood saturation, and I like a lot of the ideas that we see throughout the bill, combining utility money and combining window ideas. There's a whole bunch of really, really great ideas that try to wrap some of this weatherization activity all together so that we can get to rental housing, some of that other stuff. But I just come back to we absolutely can't fail. in this task. So we need to make sure that we hold these organizations to a really high standard. They prove that they can receive this money and get out and mobilize and reach the community to the extent that's possible.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Senator Dibble, that is a concern, and I've heard from a number of the existing programs, and many of them are gearing up to expand, but they can, I'm hearing that they can take maybe, you know, gear up to maybe triple their capacity or quadruple their capacity. And that's why there also are plans for training other groups and for building other groups, perhaps from unemployed or underemployed construction workers and youth.
And then, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
And then on that subject, you know, I just wanted to echo Senator Anderson's comments. You know, again, there's a whole bunch of good ideas that are in this bill. You know, I think every good idea I've heard in the last 2 weeks has found its way into this bill. So I'm really happy to see it. But just wanted to put a emphasis also on, you know, there's going to be enough, I think, enough work and enough money to get the trades off the bench, as well as, you know, let's reaching into those disadvantaged communities as well that maybe, you know, aren't yet a part of the trades but could become a part of the trades. And I think that's a big hope and an aspiration in those communities, and I think we can do that.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen has a question, but there is somebody in the audience who would like to testify.
Okay. Did you want to ask your question for Senator?
Well, I did, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And Senator Anderson and myself were just talking about this particular funding, and I know that Congressman Waltz was in my Senate district looking at a school that, if they do not do something for that school, they will have to close. So, and they can't seem to get a bond passed or any levy passed, nothing, mm-hmm. a referendum passed. And it's a 5-star school, and it's just falling apart. And then he was also down at Rushford Peterson. So those are his two priorities in his congressional district. My question is, I have two questions, actually. Was there some dollars in the federal stimulus package for infrastructure, or was that taken out? And this is the only dollars left for school districts to do something to help their buildings? Do you know? Does anybody know?
Yeah.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
No, this is just, we're just talking about weatherization and energy dollars. There are other dollars for infrastructure that are moving through local units of government. Like, I don't know about schools, but I know cities and counties as well as through the states, so.
Mr. Chair, yeah, my question, Senator, was specifically for schools, because I thought the school infrastructure allocation was dropped off. That's what I understood.
No,
but
I
could
know.
Be wrong. It's not. Is
sure.
That correct? That's okay. My other question then.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, is for somebody that does have a school district that's in dire need like that, because Congressman Wallace was just appalled. We're all just appalled. But do I need to draw up a bill and have that go through the normal process or send it to Senator Anderson's committee? Or I'm a little confused on how these dollars are going to work for a school district that's been targeted. That would be perfect for this program. How does that work?
Senator Anderson, you have suggestions?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, if you want this district to be get priority for energy efficiency improvements, you could drop a bill that would put some more criteria in place. But this program would probably work for them. I mean, maybe what you should do is talk to the school officials and see if the program, you know, Commerce can work with them and figure out if this program would they be eligible for it, and if how much of their infrastructure needs could be met through this PB program with the cash infusion that we're talking about, and how much of it, some of it just probably wouldn't be eligible for these energy funds, though. That's the problem, is they'd have to find some other source of funding to do the asbestos removal or some of the other work that might need to be done if it's not directly energy efficiency related.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
But does this approval need to go through the Department of Education, though? Or, I mean, and how, you know, where's the authority on these federal dollars? I mean, I guess we're all probably wondering how this is all going to work out.
Well, this, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
This is all this big pot of money that we're all got our eyes on spending and have lots of ideas for is, I mean, there's two big fund allocations that are going to the Department of the Office of Energy Security. One is the weatherization program, and one is their state energy program. And these are existing appropriation items for the department from the federal government. It's just that they've multiplied the amount that's coming by lots and lots and lots. So that's where, and so the state and the department can answer this better than I can, but the state energy program funding is pretty broad in terms of what's eligible, but it definitely has to be energy related, you know. So that's the problem, is that if the school needs other repairs that are not related to saving energy or renewable energy, then I don't think this funding would work for them, but they could use this for part of their repairs.
Right, right.
So the other part, I would advise you to talk to Senator Stumpf or to the Commissioner of Education and see if they're aware of any dollars, other dollars, or else introduce a bill and ask Senator Langseth for some bonding money for that. So I'm not sure what the answer is.
Sounds like introduce a bill and we'll get the ball rolling that way, one way or another.
Yeah,
we have some other questions from members. Senator Pertner, so you said someone wanted to give some additional testimony or thoughts.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Bauer from Family and Children's Services here, and the Higher Minnesota Coalition.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bauer. Please introduce yourself for the record, and we'll listen to your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jeff Bauer. I'm the Public Policy Director at Family and Children's Service. But today I'm here representing the Higher Minnesota Coalition, which stands for Healthcare, Infrastructure, and Renewable Energy. And we're a coalition of now over 60 community organizations with the shared goal of securing equitable representation for women, communities of color, and low-income communities in the emerging green economy. And so I want to start by thanking Senator Prettner-Sullen for taking the lead on this bill. We are in support of this bill. The point I wanted to make today is in the original bill language before the delete all amendment under the training activity guidelines, the language was much more broad. It included opportunities, industrialization centers, skilled trades labor unions, nonprofit community organizations, really as conduits and as organizations that have access to a lot of the communities that are in need of these jobs. And our coalition has put together over the last 2 months now three town hall forums in communities to discuss these opportunities. The first one we had 200 people, the second one we had 400 people, and the third one now we had 600 people. And so the delete all amendment includes, as Senator Anderson pointed out, much narrower language about who would have access to these training opportunities. And as a coalition, we would continue to encourage, as Senator Anderson pointed out, that the training opportunities be opened up to a much broader segment of our communities, in particular those who are struggling, in particular economically right now.
Mr. Chair. Bauer, I just question you. You said there's something was removed in the amendment that you're concerned with.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Prettner-Sullen,
the original bill on lines 4.9 to 4.11, and Mr. Chair, I wouldn't object to amending the bill to put that back into the language.
Thank you, and I can in the original bill.
Actually, a lot more than that.
Yeah, the original bill, it was originally
Senator Prettner-Sullen, that language is still in the bill, just to move maybe to a different. It's on 3.33 to 3.35 in the amended bill is the same language that you're referring to.
Amendment is.
Those who would be trained.
Did you have some other concerns, Mr. Bauer?
No, now that we've located the language. But we, the broader point being, again, to echo Senator Anderson's point that continuing to make sure that we're targeting a lot of these opportunities to communities who historically haven't been able to be involved, even through building trades, is very important to our coalition. So,
okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you
Bauer.
For your time.
First, Senator Olstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand what you're getting at, getting more people to work in underserved communities. But the flip side of this thing is supposed to move pretty fast, and you know, there's a ton of electricians on the bench, carpenters, everybody's laid off. We want all these homes weatherized and new glass and new windows put in, but I think they need to be done by, like, journeyman-level mechanics and skilled labor people, because I think bringing on some people to teach the trade, but it's going to go so fast that I don't know if, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I recognize what your concern is, but on the flip side, because this is going to be a very quick-moving program, I think you're almost going to have to utilize trained craftspeople.
Well, Senator Olstein, I think I see what you're saying, but I can tell you that a lot of the stuff that needs to be done doesn't need that skilled of an individual to do a lot of it. You need direction, and so we can start to train some of these folks into the jobs that need to be done. In the short term, you know, that this initial wave, yes, we're going to probably want to draw on those that are kind of sitting on the bench and ready to go that don't that already have the training. But a lot of these projects are going to be ongoing. So, you know, we can start to get those wheels in play to start getting those folks ready for, you know, the long-term work that needs to be done. And I think those are the things that we're going to be looking at with this as well. It's part of what the Green Jobs Task Force was looking at, is making a concerted effort and focus on making sure that we don't sidestep looking at that segment, you know, of our community that's often overlooked, and bringing them in as we develop these programs.
Senator Prentice-Solon. Mr. Chair, Section 8 does address training, brief training, and utilizing those who are trained first and then allowing them to supervise those who would be trained later.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olstein, I really appreciate what you've been saying. It's absolutely correct. I agree with you 100%. And the only thing I would add is that it's important, and we might want to add some language to make sure that we have, you know, that there's, you know, that the standards are high and that you do follow-up audits to make sure that the work is being performed well. I think that's another important component. I've heard that suggestion from folks. I see nods, and I just this is, and Senator Prentner-Solon and I have been talking about this. It's obviously a work in progress, and we're, you know, we'll get that added in as well as we move forward in the process. So I think there's going to be a lot of jobs for a lot of people, and so there'll be, I think, plenty of opportunity to go around if we do this right.
Mm-hmm. Other comments, questions from members?
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 657 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance.
Before we move on that, was there anyone else in the room that wanted to comment or any other thoughts on this bill? Members, any questions? On that motion to recommend, Senator Prentner-Solon moves that Senate File 657 be recommended to pass and referred to finance. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. The next meeting, I'm told, is going to be March 5th. We'll be talking about seabed at that meeting, so they want to get prepared. It should be a fun meeting. Otherwise, we've adjourned our business for the day, and this meeting is adjourned.
Okay.
Fine fun.